Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored as always by 50 West Brewing Company. Owner Bobby Slattery, he's better known to you all as Optimistic Bobby for his rosy Bengals takes, but he truly has something special going on down on Route 50 in Newtown. They combine delicious beers, like my personal favorite, the best IPA anywhere, coast to coast, as well as always rotating seasonal selections. They combine that with an active lifestyle, running groups, sand volleyball leagues, cycling, canoeing, all that based out of the Pro Works. Go on down there, eat some fantastic food, drink some great local craft beer in what I honestly think is the best brewery environment our city has going. Anyway, if you get a chance, head on down to 50 West Brewing Company. Always a great time where every beer is a journey. Join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company. Every week, your Bengals Beat writers Paul Danner Jr. and Fletcher Page take you inside Paul Brown Stadium. We're plugged into the club from the front office to the field. Win or lose, hiring or firing, we're always here to keep you in the loop. Let's go. All right, welcome into the latest pre-draft edition of the Bengals Beat podcast presented by our good friends at 50 West Brewing Company. It is time to get real. Real talk. Hashtag real talk.
It's the latest and last, which I think is going to be good for me because we've gone through this process. I've screwed myself into the ground.
Yeah.
By
every single pod that we've done over the last month, you have started with one opinion and ended it on the complete, almost
I've
opposite side.
I've just confused myself. The more I learn, the dumber I am.
So we've got a lot to get to in the BBP. Of course, the draft is Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Thursday at 8 o'clock, the first round begins, which has the Bengals, if they pick at 11, somewhere in that 9:30 range, I would think. But we'll see how all that plays out. Of course, we will have everything on the site. Once they pick somebody, we'll have analysis, a breakdown, quotes from coaches and the player up and buzzing you in your pocket. That'll be all weekend, which will keep us very busy on Saturday when the Bengals have 5-6 round picks and both of us might actually die. Just keel over and pass out.
Maybe they'll trade some of those or a forfeit one.
I mean, that would be nice.
Yeah.
How about they do something for the Scribes?
They could donate it to charity.
The Vikings basically did that right. About 10 years ago, right? Yeah. So we've got a lot to get to. I want to start, before I start talking about everything we're going to do on this particular podcast, you know, which is really our big full-on, this is what we see preview, remind you that we are again doing the live Bengals Beat podcast the Monday after the draft. So it'll be next Monday, April 29th at 6 p.m. at 50 West. Zach Taylor is going to be our guest, so coach coming off his first draft here. We're going to talk about players. We're going to talk about scenarios that happen. Of course, Duke was our guest there last year, and it was great running through some scenarios that had possible happened with possible trades and player that he liked. And we talked about Sean Brewer, the chain-smoking tight end he drafted in 2001. And it was a great time, and I plan on this being a great time as well. You'll be able to submit some questions that we can go through with Zach. We're going to really cover everything. We can talk a little bit about what his first few months have been like on the job. I'm just really looking forward to it. Probably my favorite event we do all year is the post-draft BBP at 50 this year with Zach. So come on down. It should be in the Pro Works. Keep an eye on Twitter. We may move it. We may go over to the brew house even, depending on if it's a nice day. We may try to do a patio setup. So not exactly sure where we're going to be, but probably, I'm guessing right now, probably at the Pro Works somewhere. But they're both it's right across the street, so you'll know. Just check in before you head up. Going to be a great event. As for this podcast, Dane Brugler is going to join us, who is the draft guide aficionado, as far as I'm concerned.
Many, many, many thanks to Dane for his draft guide, which is uber comprehensive,
dude,
and awesome.
This thing every year is just saves the day. I mean, I probably buy 3 or 4 different draft guides that I use. Got people that I trust that I've used over the years that I like to use as points of reference to cross over each other, see where differences are, and nothing compares to his as far as depth and really having a lot on everybody. Every tidbit you could ever imagine on a PFA is out there. If you get a chance, at DP Brugler on Twitter, he has pinned to the top. You can go to get his draft guide. It's awesome to have at your disposal draft weekend. We are going to rank the Bengals. We're going to go 1 through about 16. And I will disclose my reason for that number in a bit. But we're going to rank what we think their board looks like. So that is set. This isn't a mock draft. That isn't how the Bengals think it will fall on their board. No, what their board looks like. So who do they have? What order do they have them in? We're going to try to pull that off and go 1 through 16 based on everything we know at this point, which we're really not going to know too much more. We've been through all the knowing. We've done the knowing. We are going to go through the 11 picks and kind of just run through those. Getting exact names is hard, but maybe even just doing an official round positional break down and go through a few of those names and try to run through as much of the 11 as we can. And then we're going to take some of your questions. Thank you that all of you that have sent them in on Twitter. We're going to run through a bunch of those. So, like I said, we got a lot to do.
I got nothing but time. So
nothing but time. It's Monday of draft week. Mini camp this week. Oh, we got to talk. We're going to talk schedule. That came out since we last recorded. So we'll give some thoughts on that. They're going to have the 3-day mini camp, which is, this is the extra one that they get for having a new coach, which is essentially an advantage to get a one last look at the players sort of in the flesh, trying to do what you want them to do and getting a feel for maybe some things that you think they can't. I could see that affecting their draft board a little bit even, where you like, you watched the tape and you thought, Devontae Harris could do this, and you get him out there and find he can't. I don't think he can do any of that.
You're like, we're going to have to bump cornerback.
Might have to bump cornerback up, or vice versa. Anyway, so we'll be out there at that. Tuesday and Wednesday is open to the media. So we'll have some kind of thoughts on what we see at minicamp. First time really for all the coaches being out there together too. Come on, now I'm tired and I feel like I've already worked too hard.
No, you did run through it there.
I've already worked too hard. It's early Monday, and I've already worked too hard. That means my expectations were low.
You need to raise your energy level.
I know.
You don't want to put this on tape.
No, this is what's on tape. You're right. They might prioritize drafting somebody above me now. Let's go in on this 1 through 16. So this is hard exercise. It's a challenging thing to do. We've got thoughts, things we've heard, how you think it will fall. All of that certainly plays into it. But when you really get into going across, because, okay, the big four tackles, right, they're going to be in the mix. The top four or so edge rushers are all in the mix. The Devons are in the mix, right? And you throw the quarterbacks in the mix, and then a few wild cards maybe. And you're trying to judge those across each other. Okay, not only how do they rank the four tackles, but where do the Devons fit in amongst the four tackles? And it's just, when you're trying to go across positions and trying to judge overall grade and talent and what coaches want, it's just tough.
Yeah, and after Nick Bosa, there's a lot of biases seeping into me. Like, my first question to you when you told me we were going to do this exercise was, where should I put Kyler Murray? Because without Cliff Kingsbury at Arizona, I'm not exactly sure what would happen with Kyler Murray.
Right.
So it's hard for me to rank him, also thinking about what the Bengals board is for Kyler Murray.
And then if Murray or Haskins are in your top 11, that means you are saying if they fall to 11, there's a chance that they are willing to pull the trigger.
Right.
If you have them in the top 11. And so let's dig into this.
All right.
So number one, I have Nick Bosa.
Question.
Yeah, I think he's a clear number one and a fit for them. I mean, you know, we have all acknowledged where will you find an instant starter for sure? I mean, you could name a bunch of positions probably, but edge, linebacker, offensive tackle are the places where if you drafted one of these guys, those are strengths of this draft in the top 15. You know, when you consider you have two elite-level linebackers, two Roquan Smiths, if you will, that's a big deal. The fact that you have all these edges, the fact that you have four offensive tackles that will go in the top 20 probably, or at least top 25, depending on where Cody Ford or, you know, who views one guy one way or not. There's just that. Those are the positions that hit the Bengals with need and have the rare talents. So Nick Bosa is that. Number two, I have Josh Allen.
I do too.
Devin White close behind. I have Devin White three.
Okay.
For their board, for what they need, Devin White is the freak show. He is. The ideal scenario is some crazy. Here's the thing, though, as we talk, and let's talk about the any chance in hell Devin White drops, right? First of all, probably not. I mean, but you can say nothing for certain. This time last year, we were talking about Derwin James is this unbelievable freak, top 10, no-brainer safety guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
He went 19 to San Diego and was proven to be that as he, you know, won all these rookie awards, defensive rookie of the year and all that stuff. He was incredible for them, for L.A. Chargers, thank you. Freaking San Diego. Why do they move? It's just the only reason they move was to
mess you up.
Was to make me look dumb.
Got to go back, look at the tape, and make corrections.
Got to make corrections. The tape says weaknesses. Still goes back to San Diego too often.
Chain smoker says San Diego.
Thankfully, I don't have chain smoker on there yet. Okay, so when I talk about there's, I just don't see a way that Devin White falls. I have to reference Derwin James because I don't think anybody would have said in their right mind that you would have seen Derwin James down into the late teens sitting there and you know, being that many spots behind Minka Fitzpatrick, another safety. So that said, I still don't see a way that happens. You have linebacker needy teams. You have Vic Fangio who drafted Roquan Smith last year, trying to establish himself, knows what his defense wants and needs, and makes perfect sense for Denver. The hope would be that all these edges get so hot, Ed Oliver, quarterbacks pop off, right? That you get QBs to pop off, and you get some of these guys.
TJ Hockenson.
You get a Hockenson in there, you get some of the tackles, and then maybe Denver thinks Bush is better than White. I would be more than fine with that with Devin Bush. More than fine.
At 11,
yeah, for that's what we're talking about. So for White to fall, you would need some serious winds of change. Tornadic winds, microbursts, jet streams like we've never seen. Cyclones. Nimbus clouds.
But what a rejoice it would be.
I can't even imagine such a scenario. But if it does, I often say no matter who they pick, there will be just people mad, right? It doesn't really matter.
The only scenario where there's no mad online is Devin White, I believe.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's it. Or what are the I can't see it. I'm thinking about Josh Allen because there have been a few situations where I've seen him to 6 or to 7. And I wonder how far he would fall. I can't see any scenario where he ends up down at 11 either. But amongst these big, there seems like a consensus of about 5 or 6 at the top. And that doesn't include Murray, which we'll get to. That where it's like those guys are going to be at the top. Them, any of them falling to 11 is almost an impossibility, and that would be Bosa, Allen, White, Quinn, and Williams. I guess that's probably the big four then. Oliver. I think a lot of people love Oliver. Enough do.
I think Oliver's polarizing. But there's enough that love him.
Yeah.
That will take him in the top 10. I think he's a trade-up guy. I think you could see a team maybe try to trade up for Ed Oliver.
Yeah. Thinking they're going
to he starts to fall.
Mm-hmm. So let's keep going. So I have Devin White 3. Do you have Quinn Williams 3?
I had Quinn Williams 3.
Which is...
Yeah, I think he's a surefire... I agree with you about Josh Allen being the guy that might fall out of that top 5. But Quinn Williams, there's no way.
No. And for the Bengals, I had Devin White ahead of Quinn Williams strictly out of need.
Right.
I just think they would see more value in Devin White over Quinn Williams for them. So I don't, you know.
So who do you have at 5?
I start the tackles. I have Juwan Taylor.
Okay.
For them and what they're looking for.
So you like the run mauling style with the ability to
be
a guard or tackle.
The run mauling tackle. Yeah, and could kick inside if you needed him to, but he's going to be your right tackle for the next 10 years, you think, that, you know, did it at the high level in the SEC, so you can project a little bit with that. Yeah, I for them, I'm putting Juwan Taylor up there at 5. Now, I don't think he's going to make it to 11.
Right.
But he might.
And that starts the discussion for me is – if you look across the to rank these top 4 offensive tackles, it's hard to find a consensus. It's hard to find 2 or 3 that are the same between Jonah Williams, Andre Dillard, Cody Ford, Juwan Taylor.
Yeah. And in the offensive tackle series, which if you haven't checked out the series yet, they're all up. So the linebacker one is the last one at the top. The links to every single one of the 11 parts are in there. Offensive tackle we put out on Saturday, and I sort of went through – and I just found all of the names that I trust the most as far as ranking on the boards and had how they all had the big 4 tackles. And you're right, they're all different. The only one that seemed to be a consensus was Cody Ford being 3rd or 4th, and most of them had him 4th. I think people think he would be a guy that would fall back. But he's the guy that most fits what we think Jim Turner wants. He's the guy that is the big bodied, aggressive finisher that just road grades and puts people on the ground. They love finishing over here. That's like, you like that? Yeah, I wasn't even trying to do that. But they love guys that know how to finish like that and can absolutely end it. And that makes me think that they have Cody Ford higher than most, and why I have him next on my Bengals board list.
Okay, so that may, I don't know if this is the big reveal for you, but that's why we're discussing 16 prospects right now.
Correct.
I don't want to steal your thunder.
No, this we can thunder. I mean, the thing is, I think that there is a very real chance, and I think I'm going to do this. This is going to be my actual mock that they move back.
Right, because like again, like we're talking about, like if you get Devin White at 11, I mean you're just going crazy because you feel like you got the 4th best player at 11.
Mm-hmm.
But if that is the not mad online scenario, but if you draft Cody Ford at 11 because on your board you've got him 1st among offensive tackles, but Mel Kiper has him 4th, that is the light this place on fire Twitter scenario for fans. Not that I think that the Bengals are worried about what the fans are thinking, but to be able to get Devin White at 11 versus getting Cody Ford at 11, I think the perception of that looks drastically different.
Yes.
if you spent that 11th pick on Cody Ford.
Yeah, I mean, Devin White would be a home run. It would be a much better pick than Cody Ford.
Right.
Obviously, by a long shot. I'm not saying that I would necessarily go this way, or that big draft groupthink, which is a very real thing, is wrong. I'm not saying they're wrong. And I mean, if the Bengals went for Cody Ford, would I think that, or if they didn't, that he would make it to 20? He might. Who knows? But I know, as far as there's a lot of teams out there that see that type of player, they want that mass. Mm-hmm. They want that huge dude. And they love the way he played in that Oklahoma offense. That would bring him higher than people that are just looking it through the prism of passing league, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of teams want someone at that right tackle position that also can totally be dominant in the run game and be good to very good with maybe upside as a pass protector. Already dominant in the run game. There are teams like that out there, and I think big draft groupthink looks through the lens of the opposite. They look through the lens of Andre Dillard, right, at Washington State, who, you know, dropped back and pass sets a million times in Mike Leach's air raid, and think, well, that's what you want, and you do, you should. In my opinion, pass protection should come first. However, the fact that there are a lot of teams that don't necessarily view it totally that way means that I think there are more teams that probably have Cody Ford higher up amongst those four than we saw in big draft groupthink.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been told that there are teams that believe that they would like to get Cody Ford, say, at 15, around that range, and they believe that he will not be there because of one specific team, yeah, and it's the Bengals.
Right.
That's who they're worried about.
Yeah. As it relates to Ford, because he is who he is. I mean, because the fit that they think that he is for what Jim Turner wants and who he is and what he's talked about and what this offense is looking for and the massive hole they have there.
And that's what I love about this draft, though, is like maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago you could say, okay, falls in love with Drew Lock, or Ed Oliver slips, and that's a guy that's a trade up guy. All right, if the Bengals can move down to the 14 to 18 range, they add a third rounder, they get the guy they like more than the others anyway, and Cody Ford, that's a great win. Mm-hmm. But now that we've gotten to the week of, you're starting to see people say, well, I don't know if Cody Ford's going to actually be around at 15 now.
Yeah. So to me, and we'll keep going through the board here in a second, I want to talk about this trade scenario. So when you look at the trade chart and you look at what the teams behind them have to offer, you can sort of start to weigh what you'll get, what that will look like, and where you can move. And so the Bengals, sitting at number 11, if you go by the old school Jimmy Johnson trade chart, that pick is worth 1,250 points, okay? Behind them are the teams that would have reason to move up. Prime amongst them is Miami at 13.
What would they be looking for?
Miami would – they're all looking for quarterbacks. Okay. That's the only reason anybody would be trading up, because this is a draft. It's very important to note this. Most people say that your sweet spot here is day two, is that if once you get beyond 20 – you can get all the way to 60 or 70, and they look about the same depending on what you're looking for. There's a lot of the same prospects in there. So to add a third-round pick, hell, to add a two in some scenario potentially, you are adding a guy that you might have taken in the late first, at least a similar grade to that.
Right.
So that, for the Bengals, a team of many needs, is very important. Especially when they can sort of help sweeten a deal with all those sixes, too, that you could kind of throw in there. So if you're sitting at 11 and you have your 1,250 points, Miami is behind you at 1,152 spots back. So let's say Miami is worried about – they're worried about you taking – I mean, they think you're going to take Dwayne Haskins if you're the Bengals.
That's a 100-point difference. You're looking at Miami. You're probably adding a four or some sort of a – you maybe you're taking their three and giving up your fourth or fifth or throwing a six. Some, you're moving up and probably adding their three, maybe moving up a round or two, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's worth something. You're moving into that. That's a whole different universe there.
That third's a pretty valuable dart.
It's a very valuable dart to acquire. Then you. So let's go further back to Washington. Now you're adding a 200-pointer. They have number 76 overall, which is worth 210 points. Boom. Clean as day. There it is. Maybe you throw in one of your sixes just to so they don't totally lose a pick, right? So you just added a number 76, which is four spots after your third rounder. You just added somebody you might have a second-round pick on or a first-round pick on because of the setup of this draft by moving back four spots. And what are the odds? If you're looking at and you're sitting in 11 and you see on your list of – you see two of the tackles, Bush, and one of the edges is still there. You know you're That's getting money. One of those right. four guys and you're adding what could be – you know, Jay Sternberger, a tight end out of Texas A&M in round three that you had a high grade on. Or Kahale Waring out of San Diego State. You know, maybe you're at – that is a huge win to pull off if you can pull it off. And Washington and Miami and right behind them at 17, the Giants, all – quarterback needs. And then who knows what one of these other teams in here might be willing to come up for if you're starting to see guys that they had it, 6, 7, or 8 on the draft. It's wide open. Everybody, they see those guys still sitting there. Maybe somebody else is willing to come up. I think you can move back, add a third, and I think there's enough teams right behind them that have that would have reason to want to give up an asset. Because that's what you do when you're going to get a quarterback, that they could pull that off.
Keep rolling through your list here because this is all predicated on Haskins maybe staying around or a team falling in love with
your
Lock.
You're thinking that – well, I think you're talking about Haskins, Lock, Jones. We could be talking about Kyler Murray, right?
If it's been a smokescreen the whole time.
I mean, in this theory – that the Cardinals pass on him, and all of a sudden he goes. The quarterbacks are all over the map of where they're going to be, and someone's going to love them, though. Someone loves a guy. That's why there's just no way of all these four quarterbacks that are all over the map, that all 32 teams think that, no.
Right.
And so whether it's Locke, whether it's Haskins, whether it's Murray, whether it's Daniel Jones – someone says, I got to go up, and I want to be the Chiefs who went up for Mahomes. I want to be the Texans who went up for Deshaun Watson at 12. And there's the Bengals sitting there, and you're thinking, shoot, they might be taking my quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I got to move up. And if they do – pull the trade off, the Bengals get exactly what they want. So let's keep going down the list.
Up number six.
So I have Montez Sweat.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Now that's your boom bust right there.
It's it. And I think they like him. I think he has potential to be the best edge rusher out of this draft. But it's just that.
Wait, I'm
he also has potential to be a joke.
Six or your seven?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That's seven.
So you had Cody Ford.
Ford.
Six.
Yeah. I have Ford. Ford and Sweat are tough to me. I might put Sweat above Ford. I could probably be convinced of that. Just because I think they probably realize that the consensus is most teams probably aren't as high on Ford as they are. So if that moves him down your board, I'm talking about their board, though,
right?
Then maybe that changes things. So I could see Sweat being above 40. I think a lot of these in this circle group here are, I'm talking one conversation here or there that maybe hasn't even happened yet, difference away. I mean, these guys are all very much in the same universe, I think, for the Bengals right now.
Yeah, I had Jonah Williams ahead of Montez Sweat.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of the offensive tackle need.
I have him next.
And again, I've become conservative in my 30s here. Montez Sweat, I love him in terms of his profile. But you're right. You've called this the John Ross pick.
This is the John Ross pick. You go through PFF is not high. They have him all the way down to second round pick. But you look at there is some production there. There is – he led all of college football in their run stop percentage, which his length and his quick twitch ability to slide in as a edge rusher, he can really help you in the run game. Obviously, his athletic profile is off the charts. The question is his heart ailment. It seems we're hearing a lot of teams taking him off their board because of that, but some teams won't be scared away by that. The Bengals have been pretty clear. If their doctors clear them, that's what they go by. That's what they did with John Ross, and there were more health issues that came with that than they bargained for. And they would be taking that risk again with Montez Sweat. They also would be taking the risk on somebody that, when he faced the best competition, didn't always show up. But you're also betting on those raw skills and being able to sort of, here we go, I can teach him.
Coach him up, guys.
Coach him up. But there's 4-4-1 at 260. There's Ben in the edge. There's all that stuff that says you're getting an elite edge rusher and a guy that could be just as good, if not maybe has more upside than the guys that we've already mentioned at edge rusher earlier, like your Josh Allens, like your Nick Bosa's.
Well, I'm going to make you groan, but you've been doing this for a while, and you understand the Bengals a lot better than I do. But I just can't have Montez Sweat that high on my board.
Yeah.
But he's certainly in the top 16. Don't get me wrong. But, like I said, I'm a little bit more conservative, and I know we're trying to project what the Bengals board is.
This is not my board.
Right.
I wouldn't be on the record of that. This is not my board.
I understand.
But I hear you. I think they like him. I think they like edge rush and the edge rusher position as a whole, as in a premium position. Although, you go back, we mentioned this in the draft series, they have not picked a defensive lineman in the first round since Justin Smith in 2001. They've always felt like they could find guys. And so that makes it even more interesting. And they have.
Right, so it's a philosophy that's not.
But they also badly needed to get after the quarterback more last year. And that would be – this would be drafting a starter. This guy would be starting opposite Carlos Dunlap day one, and then there would be a rotation with Carl Lawson coming in. I think you're going to see more some 3-4 type stuff, some 5 fronts, whatever. You're going to see different stuff out of Lou Anarumo where you can use – Carl Lawson, Montez Sweat, and Carlos Dunlap together in some capacity on the field. I mean, I think you would see creativity could come from that in finding ways to get after the quarterback, which they just didn't do anywhere near enough last year.
I also have Dwayne Haskins ahead of Montez Sweat.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay. So I have Sweat, then Williams, and then I have Bush.
I have Bush ahead of Sweat as well.
So I still haven't gotten to the quarterback yet, and I just...
I'm sorry. Let me just make for clarity. I had Jonah Williams where you have Montez Sweat. That's 7.
Yeah.
I have Devin Bush at 8.
Devin Bush at 8. So I have Devin Bush at 9. So just sticking Sweat in there is the difference that we have right now. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think they have Bush. I put Bush ahead of Dillard and the quarterbacks. And so we're talking 3 of the tackles ahead of Bush, but maybe not Dillard because I think they get nervous. I think they get nervous about not having seen him as much as a run guy, and then not being as he's obviously big enough, but certainly not being as big as Cody Ford, or as much as a I think they really do value the run road grading right tackle, even though Dillard would be a badass as a pass blocker. But I think they have him right after that. So then I have Rashawn Gary. So now we're in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. I have Rashawn Gary. And then at 12, I have Dwayne Haskins, and that's on purpose. I just don't see it. I think they like him. I think they like the idea of him. I think they think he's going to be a very good quarterback in this league eventually. And they could even see him being the guy that could come in and do a great job here. I don't think they're willing to do it at 11, with considering those other needs, what those other guys could bring, and what that would mean passing the buck on positions like edge and linebacker and tackle for the future. Because here's the thing. At the end of the day, this is what keeps coming back into my head. They want Andy Dalton to be the guy. There is belief amongst everyone in the front office that Andy Dalton can be and will be the guy, and be the guy that you have seen at the beginning, first half of last year, in all of 2015, when he's had decent pieces around him and good coaching around him, be that's who he is. Because Ken Zampezi ruined this dude and basically stole 2 years from him. And as did the drafting of two terrible tackles, right? No protection and a bad offensive coordinator stole those 2 years from him. And so what do you have? You have 2015 and that first half of last year before you lose everybody. You have no tight ends. You lost your running back. You lose A.J. Green. You still have Bobby Hart and Alex Redmond playing on the right side. I think if you took Dwayne Haskins, you would be, in a way, cutting Andy Dalton's legs out from under him in his make-or-break year. And I don't think they want to do that. And I do think there is a thought that, well, if we can deal with that problem next year, if we need to deal with that problem next year, this would be a more proactive move. This would be a very visionary move. But I think they see themselves in a window to win right now. They have no plans on being back in that level next year. They think they're going to be a good team. And I think 5-3 with the bad defense they had last year suggests they can be an easier schedule. For all those reasons and belief in Andy Dalton, I don't think they pull the trigger on Dwayne Haskins. It doesn't mean they don't like him. It doesn't mean they haven't done a ton of research on him, because they are looking into it and they're very aware of that, and they like what he can be. I just don't think they do it.
Yeah, and I think it's an advantageous situation, because I agree with you. They're moving forward with Andy. They love him. We've talked about it. But there are these mock drafts are pumping it out there that the Bengals might take Haskins, which creates the ability, I believe, for them to move back and get the guy they want there anyway.
Right. I think teams being nervous of the Bengals taking Haskins works out for them gloriously if they do want to trade back, which I think they do.
I do too.
And so if they could pull that off, that plays to their advantage. So if you're sitting there looking at Ford, Sweat, Williams, Bush, and Washington calls looking for Haskins, boom.
Pretty easy decision.
Give me number 76 overall. Here's our number 213. So you don't lose a pick. We'll go take one of those four guys back at 15, call it a day, and call it a big win for us. And we'll take insert tight end or another edge rusher or another tackle of choice, whatever. And those that guy might be starting, for them this year. So I think that is the dream scenario. But to continue to go, so then I have Haskins
at 12.
And then I have Farrell from Clemson. Then I have Ed Oliver. Then I have Kyler Murray. Then I have Christian Wilkins. And then I have Drew Lock.
I your list is fine. I dropped Ed Oliver and Christian Wilkins. They were the bottom of my list just because I don't think they'll draft an interior defensive lineman.
I just think when you look at Ed Oliver, I think one, they think he's too small. Two, he would need to play three techniques, so he would be Geno Atkins' backup for the next couple of years. That brings his value to them down. Not that he won't be a great player, not that he won't be fantastic or not worthy of a top 10 pick. So I think Ed Oliver going off the board early is advantageous to the Bengals if that.
Yeah, because it
happens.
Just takes up.
It takes. It's one more guy that they probably have above them that would bounce down. So all of those guys, Murray. Although I think Haskins being around helps them in the possibility of wanting to trade back. Mm-hmm. Man, what a fascinating! I want Haskins to be there just to see what happens. That will be an action pick, baby. We will learn so much about the Bengals. We will learn so much about their strategy. You know, you'll see the action of trade possibilities. If Haskins is there, things get really, really real. If he isn't there, one of these guys continues to bump down to them. And you may be looking at somebody that feels like they need to come up to get a Drew Lock, or, hell, maybe one of the tackles that slid that they didn't think. It's just a really interesting position. I feel like the Bengals are at sort of a fulcrum point of this draft. They really are. Because somebody has a top 10 grade on somebody that's sitting there at 11, guaranteed,
mm-hmm.
and might be willing to part ways, and then you throw the quarterback element in there.
Yes, I think that players like Kyler Murray especially, you mentioned Ed Oliver, those guys are, like you said, they're going to create the ability for one or two or multiple guys with top 10 round grade or top 10 grades to be there at 11.
Yeah. All right, so we completed that exercise. It only took us 40 minutes. I mean, there's just so much that goes into the dynamics of this top 10 because this is as wide open. We've been saying this, but it's really true. Beyond the first few, and even there's some question amongst those, it's just as wide open once you get out of that top five as I can remember because you throw the wild cards of – all these guys at the same position and the quarterbacks and everything else, it's really hard to predict. It's really hard to predict. Pick Bengals fans will hate. Sweat? What would they hate more, Sweat or Ford?
Sweat.
Sweat.
Because Ford's at least a position of major need.
Ford at least kicks Bobby Hart out.
Right. Well, they'll love Ford.
Upside, Bobby Hart no more. Bobby Hart's now your backup. Sweat? He could come in and be great. You know, go back if you want to. You know, we talked a little bit in about Rashawn Gary, which I think also would make Bengals fans mad in the same way. You know, guys with high elite level. It's not like Montez Sweat wasn't good. He did produce. He actually was number two in the SEC in pass rush efficiency last year behind Josh Allen only. But he did a lot of that damage against the middle to bottom tiers and not necessarily against the best that he faced.
I think Sweat's the pick that makes people angry or anything with quarterback. Trade, a pick, either way.
I've been interested as I, you know, last week posted the quarterback section. And I was surprised the reaction of people that were so against it. Because, you know, we hear so often the Dalton haters. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. I would think that discussing the fact that Haskins is a possibility for them if he's there would have brought more, oh, yeah, right? It didn't. I saw I might have been a 50-50 split
mm-hmm.
of people saying that would be stupid. People that don't believe in Haskins, which is fine.
Well, obviously, there's a reason why a quarterback is still available at number 11.
Exactly.
So there's plenty of reasons why you would scream.
This is a perfect opportunity to segue into Dane Brugler, who I'm going to open up. He has Dwayne Haskins as his number one quarterback. We're going to talk for a while with him about Haskins, about why he really thinks that it's a great fit for the Bengals for both sides. So let's go into that. I've got about 16 minutes here with Dane Brugler. His draft guide, The Beast, is out. Go to @DPBrugler on Twitter, and you can have it. You'll want this thing on draft day. It is incredible. So here is my conversation with Dane Brugler.
All right, moving on now on the Bengals Beat podcast. It's not every year one of my favorite things to do, and that is to bring in Dane Brugler, Dane, who puts out the beast every year, which is the read. If you want to know about every pick, if you want to be sitting there on draft day and know what's going on, who these guys are, all the background on everybody, this is the draft guide that you need to have. Dane, how are we doing?
I'm doing well, Paul. I appreciate the kind words. And, yeah, hopefully everybody checks out this year's draft guide. Best way to do it is check out my Twitter, and the link is pinned at the top there. It's I promise, if you're interested in the NFL draft, you will not be disappointed by the level of detail and the information in the guide. So hopefully everybody checks it out.
Yeah, it's incredible, and congratulations to you again on putting it together. Because from someone I know during the draft, I know I am using it constantly. Once we get into teams like the Bengals that decide they need 5-6 round picks, let me just say that I will be definitely be scrolling through without a doubt come Saturday. Let's dive a little bit in real quick, and I want to start in just getting right to it. You know, we've seen so many people connecting the Bengals with Dwayne Haskins in the first round. You have Haskins as the number one quarterback on your board here, and you've kind of seen that scheme a possible fit here as well. What is it about Haskins that you like him as the number one QB, and what is it about the fit with the Bengals that you think would work?
Well, with Haskins, I'm a believer in his arm and what he offers above the neck. I think those two – you give me those two traits, those two areas for a quarterback, and I feel good about his development and not only who he is now, but what he's going to be 2 years from now, 3 years from now, moving forward. Haskins, obviously, most people know, small sample size, one-year starter, 14 career starts. Now, he was extremely productive in that 1 year, one of the best seasons in Big Ten history, with 50 touchdowns, passing touchdowns, over 70% completions. So with Haskins, there's a lot to like. Now, some of his film is obviously, a little bit of a product of that offense, a lot of, shorter throws, screens, utilizing all the talent that Ohio State had at the receiver position. And the biggest area of concern with Haskins is just his ability to navigate through a muddy pocket. And that's something that obviously in the NFL you have to be able to do, because pressure is just the name of the game. It's going to happen in the NFL, and you have to be able to not only sense it, but at the same time, keep your feet married to your eyes and move throughout the pocket, find that open space, those second chance throws. And you see him on film watching Haskins, you saw him get better throughout the season. And so that gives, I think, evaluators hope that it's more of an experience-based issue, not a talent-based issue. And so with Haskins, but the arm is special, both velocity and accuracy. Above the neck, I think his the ability to process information, break down coverages, understanding what the defense is trying to do, I'll bet on that type of skill set every day. And with Cincinnati, you love the fit because of the situation. Having the veteran quarterback there, having a bright young coach taking over, being able to groom him. So just talking about a landing spot, I think it would make it would just be a great fit for both sides, both for Haskins and the Bengals, if they were to go in that direction.
Do you have a comp for Haskins that you've been using?
It is really tough with him, because you do see like little pockets of, this guy and that guy. You see a little bit of Dante Culpepper. You see a little bit of like a Ben Roethlisberger. You see, I haven't found one that I love as like a true apple to apples, but you do see a little bit of this, a little bit of that, in a few different guys. He's really, really interesting. Again, that lower body is really where he needs to get better, and where it kind of skews some comparisons. But I think it's more of an experience based thing, not a talent based thing. If he were to go back for his junior year at Ohio State, I think we'd see him get better and better. We'd have a better understanding of his full skill set. But now that he's in this draft class, you get to make that projection, which makes it a little tougher. But, you know, I'd rather bet on his skill set than any other quarterback in this draft.
Yeah, I've heard from a few people that they just wish he would have gone back because they would have loved to have seen that second year of him. Instead, there's a little bit of a raw projection there. Sticking with quarterbacks briefly, I mean, what is that next tier? I know the Bengals have had some interest in Ryan Finley. What do you make of the second, third, fourth round tier of who has maybe the highest upside as a projection down the road and what you know of Ryan Finley as well?
Well, and I guess that's a key part of the question is upside compared to, you know, a quarterback that's already near his ceiling. If you're looking for, what are you looking for? If you're looking for, you know, a true backup or a guy that's going to be able to step in and win you a few games, you know, not someone that you really consider a viable long-term starter, but, you know, a solid reliever who can come in if needed. Well, then Will Grier from West Virginia or Ryan Finley from NC State, those are the guys you're looking at. Players who are already near their ceiling and they have flaws that will likely keep them from being a long-term NFL starter, but there's reasons to be encouraged by them. With Ryan Finley, you know, he's a guy who has a very average arm, but you see a little bit of Nick Foles to his game because of the way he's able to be efficient, you know, his ability to throw a touch, his understanding of the playbook. He has a very confident player with the way he is able to look at the defense, break down what they're doing, and then make a throw. So with Ryan Finley, I think he's going to be a backup in the NFL for a long time. Will Grier, kind of similar. Like he's a rhythm passer. When he finds that rhythm, he can be deadly. He just needs to find that rhythm, and it's not always easy. Love his deep ball. But if you're looking for more of the upside quarterback, guys who maybe aren't ready right away and you're going to need some time, but they have better potential, higher ceilings than, you know, the Greers and the Finleys. Well, then you're looking at Jarrett Stidham from Auburn and Tyree Jackson from Buffalo. Both these guys are going to be somewhere in that third to fourth round range. With Stidham, you have a player who started at Baylor, went to Auburn, and I think he's going to be a lot better once you remove him from that Auburn scheme where everything is it's elementary level stuff. It's third grade stuff. And once you just get him out of that scheme, let you know, expand his game and everything that he can do, you see a lot of the traits that translate. His mobility, his arm strength. He's a great kid, has the makeup that you want. Really, I was watching him against SEC defenses. You worry about the trigger, his ability to really maximize that mobility to have those second chance throws. You didn't see it all the time. But I think removing him from that Auburn offense is going to do him wonders in terms of his development. And then Tyree Jackson from Buffalo, who just a mountain of a man for a quarterback, 6'7", 250 pounds, but a really good athlete, can move around. He was really productive at Buffalo against MAC competition. He was a MAC Offensive Player of the Year last year. He has a little bit of Cardell Jones in him. And when I say that, I mean he has just a hose for an arm, but doesn't always know where it's going. When he hits it, it looks great. And there are times I could pull up clips where It's you know, nothing but highlights of him, you know, running and moving and avoiding the pass rush and then throwing off a laser down the field and hitting his receiver, a lot of times Anthony Johnson, and creating those big plays. But the full body of work, when you put it all together, you know, he's missing some open throws. His anticipation's not there. He just has a long ways to go. He's another junior who I wish would have went back to school to get better. But nonetheless, you're excited about the potential and what he could be. And that's why I expect him to go somewhere in those top four rounds. Just don't expect him to see the football field anytime soon.
Yeah. I want to talk about offensive tackles real quick. Those top four or three, depending on how you view it, are all going to be going off the board early in the first round. Let me talk specifically about Cody Ford. You know, we know he's a big, aggressive road grader with finish and all of that. What is some of the downside to Cody Ford? What do you make of that evaluation? And then what is their second and third round? If the Bengals don't get an offensive tackle with their first pick, they're going to want to get one in the next couple of rounds. What is there in the second and third in particular, day two, where a guy that could come in and potentially maybe even be playing for you this year?
Well, with Cody Ford, it's really just about some of the nuances of the position, and really it's about timing. And that's obviously something that's crucial to an offensive lineman and his success. You know, it's great to have length. It's great to have power. But it really doesn't mean anything unless you have timing and you understand what the block, what the rushers are trying to do, and you time up your punch, your hands are ready. And he's able to get away with some of those, you know, bad habits where his hands are, you know, down by his belt, or his punch timing isn't there. Just, you know, the upper and lower bodies aren't on the same page. He was able to get away with that, at the college level in the Big 12. That's not going to be the case in the NFL. So for him, it's all about just being more consistent with his technique, with his ability to use his hands, with timing, and use all those gifts. Because once he, you know, he really starts to click mechanically, I think he has a chance to be, you know, a big time player in the NFL, because of, you know, those other things that you mentioned. And then once we get to the second and third round, there's going to be, you know, a handful of tackles that come off the board. But, you know, each one has some questions. I mean, a reason we're talking about these guys is day two picks, not day one picks. Caleb McGarry from Washington gets a bit narrow in his stance, and, you know, there are times where he will struggle with that. I'm a big fan of Max Sharping from Northern Illinois, who isn't the best athlete. He knows that, but he's powerful, he's smart, and he just does such a unique job of, you know, like, he knows he's not a top-tier athlete. He understands what his weaknesses are, and he's so good at masking those weaknesses because of his strengths. And so he focuses on what he does really well, and that really shows. You can throw on the tape of him versus Brian Burns this past year at Florida State, one of the best pass rushers in this draft, and he shuts him down. And so I think Max Sharping is a player who will be highly sought after on day two. Titus Howard from Alabama State's in that mix, who one of the better small school FCS players in this draft. I think most people know his story, former high school quarterback, tight end in high school or in college when he first got to Alabama State. One day they said, you know, he practiced a little bit on the offensive line, but one day in the middle of a game, a starter went down. They threw him out there, and, you know, he started 4 years at Alabama State, developed his body. There's a lot of, you know, discourse with his fundamentals and, you know, just making sure that everything's on the same page, from his hands to his eyes to his feet to his knees. Everything, the biomechanics of the position aren't really natural to him at this point, but all the ability is there. And so he's more of a guy you're going to sit on the bench and you're going to develop him for a year at least before you want him ideally seeing the field. So this tackle class, we're going to see four of these guys come off the board pretty quickly. You know, Greg Little from Ole Miss could also be a first rounder. And then, you know, we're going to see some carryover in the second and third round. Definitely be some options there that will appeal to teams.
Couple quick ones before you get out of here. Mid-round tight end that will be the best in 2020. Who do you like? One of those guys that, given a year of work, would really be, could be a star next year?
We'll see how early some of these guys go. I'm a big fan of Kahale Waring from San Diego State, who, you know, is didn't touch a football until his senior year of high school. Goes to San Diego State, had to Google tight end to understand what that meant. But you watch him, and he's a big time athlete in basketball and water polo and soccer and cross country and everything, but football. And you see that athleticism in his routes, and, you know, the body control as a blocker. And so, you know, he's still growing and developing, and he's not close to his ceiling. I think Waring, you know, given a year to develop at the NFL level, by 2020, you know, we'll be talking about Waring. If he's in the right situation, could be talking about him as an absolute steal wherever he ends up, probably somewhere in the third round.
After the two Devons at linebacker, who do you think will end up being the best pro beyond those two?
Well, I'm glad you kind of phrased it like that, because after the two Devons, if you don't get your Devon, good luck, you know, because there's a little bit of a drop-off for the next linebacker. But I'll tell you what, there are some linebackers I really like. There aren't just a lot of them. It's not about volume, but there are a few. Jelani Tavai from Hawaii is one of my favorite players in this draft, and it's kind of been out of sight, out of mind for him. He hurt his shoulder late in the season, so he missed the Senior Bowl, missed the combine, wasn't able to be a full participant at the pro day. And so because of that, not a lot of people are talking about him, but I'm telling you, Jelani Tavai is a big-time player, And he's a modern day linebacker where he has that inside out versatility. He has three down potential. You can watch him on tape, blitzing, dropping in coverage, playing the run, doing everything you want. So at 6'2.5", 250 pounds, Jelani Tavai, I think, is going to be a steal. It's somewhere in the top 75 picks. Jermaine Pratt from NC State, another guy who I'm a fan of. Blake Cashman from Minnesota received a lot of kind of, you know, who comments when I included Blake Cashman in my pre-combine top 10 linebackers. But he's a guy who kind of lived up to it at the combine with a 4.50, 40-yard dash at 6'1", 237 pounds. He's a special teams guy most of his career until became a starter as a senior, and he blew up with over 100 tackles. You see the read-react quickness, the speed that he plays with, just a smart football player, toughness, competitiveness, not questions for him. So I think Blake Cashman will be a solid top 100 pick and a guy that might outplay his draft position.
Dan, I appreciate your time so much. I know you're busy as heck this time of year, and the draft guide is incredible. Once again, a reminder to everybody to go at DP Brugler on Twitter, right there pinned at the top. You can find the draft guide. Go check it out. Incredible stuff. You'll want it on draft weekend for sure. Dane, thanks so much for your time.
Anytime. Thanks, Paul.
All right. Much thanks to Dane for spending time. He's so busy this time of year, and to take time to share some of that. I mean, just the wealth of information is incredible. You could talk to him for hours, and he just continue to reel off names and tidbits, and it's pretty incredible to watch. And great for him to join us. All right, let's now go through. We're going to run through sort of some quick hit of the entire Bengals draft with the picks that they have. And then after that, we'll do some questions. How we like that?
Love the questions. I'm going to try to get pack in as many Twitter questions as possible.
Let's fire them off. Okay. All right. So let's go through Bengals currently at 11. I'm going to mock trade. I'm going to predict the trade back. Let's say they move back. I think Washington being the most likely. They need the quarterback the most. They're nervous about Miami maybe at 13. Hell, they might be nervous about Green Bay pulling off a surprise or something. They're nervous about the Bengals taking a quarterback. I think they might be most likely to come up. So I'm going to mock trade.
Okay, hold on.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to read your mind a little bit. For mock trading, I got three players that I think are in play then.
At 15?
At 15, okay. That I think would be very good to be choosing from.
Well, you know my list.
That's true.
We just spent 45 minutes on my list.
So you're looking at Devin Bush, Cody Ford, Montez Sweat. Those would be the three players.
My board would say Ford there, and with Sweat neck and neck, I would say Cody Ford. I mean, if they were picking amongst those three, they would be feeling so great about life.
They'd be winning.
They would definitely be winning. I would go Cody. I think they would go Cody Ford there.
For the need and the value.
That could go either way. Yeah. They can't lose. That would be
All right.
Depending on who you're talking. Well, in their eyes, they couldn't lose in that spot. How about that? I mean, I think through our eyes, I would go Devin Bush. Personally, you're asking me, I think that they need to be higher on Devin Bush and taking him and just knocking that linebacker issue out.
Right.
It's unsettled. It's not taken care of. They need an elite player there. That's me.
Yeah.
If I had a shot at Devin Bush, I would swing at it. Period.
That's the way I would answer this question. If he was there at 15, I would take him. I think they'll take Cody Ford. Now, for the purposes of me right here, you've made this trade. I'm going to add a third-round pick.
Number 76 overall. Okay. Washington 76 overall is now the Bengals pick. And they have one less sixth-round pick, which they traded. They basically moved up from the sixth to the third and moved back four spots in the first round.
All right, second round. So we've got Cody Ford here.
So the tackle is taken care of. I don't think that they go back in on that spot for a while. So now they're freaking out about linebacker, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you –
You've got a full 24 hours to freak out about it, too.
Plenty of time to think about it. But I still don't think that means they go there in this spot. Look, we know their history of third-round linebackers. It's like, how many times are they going to keep playing the same song? It's like Lynyrd Skynyrd playing Freebird every concert. You know it's coming, except no one's yelling for it.
And especially since they've added a third, they're going to have two selections in that range.
Yeah, but I think it depends. Obviously, I just think they're still close to a BPA range here, where adding the third gives them flexibility to still take a shot at any position, and I think that opens up positions like receiver, where we learn about the John Ross variable. You know, a Paris Campbell. Paris Campbell, Deebo Samuel. We can start talking about those guys in that range.
Luxury pick.
A little bit, because you added the third, and you can add to that offense. And if you did that, here you go, Zach Taylor. You're the offensive guy. This is the offensive guru staff. We're going to give you Cody Ford and Paris Campbell, and you better go win and play some offense. And Andy Dalton better look great. You're giving him the weapons. You're giving him the QB gurus. You would be setting him up. I think that comes into play. I think in round two, that comes very much into play. You know, I think they've got their eye on some linebackers that they think will be around in the third and fourth round.
Okay, so linebackers not going in the second here.
I don't think they will. I don't think that they will. Not at 40. Not where they're at 42. You're probably getting somebody with a 2A or 1C type of pick there, you know, probably for them. So I'm going to say I think wide receiver will be in play there. You could have an edge rusher come into play.
How about this one? What about Dexter Lawrence?
That would be a fall for him. That would be a fall for him.
That would be I would even call that like a shocking second round move.
I could totally see it. I don't think that's out of play. We had that as a top three need for them.
If
really.
He fell that far,
sure,
I guess it'd be shocking.
That's what you're talking about. I mean, at 42, you're in a premium position to find a unique faller that could fit you, and that opens up a ton of positions. And I just think it keeps so that's almost harder. I think is harder to predict than their first round pick.
Because, I 100% agree with that.
Yeah, much harder because I think they're still in a BPA. Even if they go tackle, I don't think that they're not pigeonholed in the linebacker or even edge rusher necessarily. So I think there's a very good close look that would happen at some of those receivers. Maybe you see a Jerry Tillery. That you mentioned Dexter Lawrence, maybe Kalen Saunders. We're talking about who knows what we're talking about. I mean, there's a lot of guys that could be in play there. So now we get to the third round. I think between them now having two thirds and the fourth, I think you see the chance of the first. Definitely a linebacker here. Definitely a linebacker here then with one of these two. So, Tavon Coney from Notre Dame. You've got a number of linebackers. Blake Cashman from Minnesota, I like. This was a dude who was a walk-on at Minnesota and then ended up becoming the center figure of one of the best defensive turnarounds we saw all year. Played great. Instinctual dudes. I think you're gonna, you're not gonna necessarily get the greatest athletes, so you're looking for guys with great instincts and really understand the game here. Those are a couple of those guys. I think a few of those would be in play. So linebacker, if they don't get the linebacker early, I think you're looking at it here. And then I think tight end looks. This could be a sweet spot for tight ends in this draft too, and you could see them show up with one of those. With one of these two third round picks and solidify that group a little bit because you have, however many games you're going to get Eifert, CJ Uzama, whatever Mason Schreck is, this guy would plug in as essentially the third tight end with some ability to be the man next year. So, Jace, there's a ton of those guys that looks like that's really a spot for tight ends this draft, is that third round, maybe even into the fourth.
And that would take you into – that would get us into a Saturday that I think is going to be – what's going to be a marathon for us.
Wild.
And but there's going to be plenty of opportunity there with that many six-round picks to double up at some positions, I think.
Yeah, and now and then it would fit more to what their history has been with defensive line, second, third, fourth mm-hmm. round. It would fit them historically more so to try to find those guys, find the Geno Atkins, the Robert Gathers, the Michael Johnsons, the Carlos Dunlaps, all these guys, second, third, fourth round, and fill out the defensive line, take advantage of some of that depth here in this spot. And then then after that, you've got all those picks. Then you're filling out your needs. Then you're basically going down the positional list that we went through. And you're starting at the top and moving your way down, going through all of those picks the rest of the way out. You still, even with our trade scenario, I think there's a chance you see them package 2 sixes. Even if they trade one away early, I think you still see a chance they package 2 sixes to move up into the fifth. To get a guy they maybe had a fourth round grade on at one of these positions and fill it out that way. So maybe they end up with 10 picks instead of 11. I think that's kind of walking through. The domino effect is interesting, though. So you go all the way back to the first pick. If they don't take the tackle, if they take Devin Bush, let's say. Now, that second-round pick is prime for a tackle because there's going to probably be
there's
that top of that second round. I think you can get a really good tackle unless they all jump up and end up being first-round picks. You know, where you're talking about Greg Little or Titus Howard or any of those guys, you could get one of them at 2. I did research on the cliff with when you can expect to get production out of an offensive tackle that you draft. And at right around 40 is when it goes from being those dudes are going to play about 100% of the time when healthy to the fall off. And then right around 70s is when you see total crapshoot after that, where most of those dudes aren't going to play. So using 42, you're still probably getting a guy that can come in, play, tons of upside, and you expect him to be even a guy like Titus Howard, who's a raw project, I think would come in and probably by the time the season starts have beaten out Bobby Hart if they use number 42 on him.
Mm-hmm.
So if they don't take the tackle in the first round, I think that spot becomes prime for tackle. So let's say they go Sweat, Howard. Now you're in still no linebacker.
Well, see,
which could be the case as well, but that was the case the other time. We're still talking about Coney and Cashman and some of the other guys.
I was going to say that even if they take Devin Bush, they could still potentially be in play for another linebacker with that third-round pick.
Absolutely. That is the bold play scenario that if you came away with Bush and Coney, and that's the advantage of adding the third, you can kind of like double up. We know they love the double ups. They've had a lot of success with those in the past. They've also had some not so much success.
That's the point of it, is that you just need to keep accumulating
more
bodies.
Yeah. So you could absolutely see that happening for them at that position. There's just a lot of scenarios, man. There's just so many, and it's hard. That's what makes it fun. This makes it a fun weekend. We will see what needs they do and don't address. If they don't come away from the first three rounds, though, with a tackle and a linebacker,
going to be some problems.
There's problems. Fatal flaws. We said it last year when they didn't go back in on tackle. Fatal flaw in their season. In many ways, it was. You know, what happened on that line was problematic because they didn't keep going in. Now, you can argue those guys weren't there. I think they could have used Orlando Brown last year, but who am I? Who am I to say?
You want to get to these questions?
Can I take a quick breather here? I'm going to breathe in and out. People are going to love this. This is good podcasting. All right. Let's go. Let's go down with some questions.
Now, some of these may have already been answered. I'll try to condense
it. If we've gone deep into them already, we won't dive too hard into them. So whatever you got.
Okay, but some of these you can just answer quickly, okay? Most surprising pick they can make at 11.
Most surprising?
What would surprise you the most at 11?
Anybody that wasn't on that list I just mentioned. So surprise me the most. I mean, Ed Oliver would surprise me.
Ed Oliver. I think that is a 0% chance of happening.
I wouldn't say zero right. just because right. I don't ever say zero, but I that would just – when you consider they have Geno, I think they view him as undersized. Ed Oliver would surprise me. Obviously, Hockenson would shock me. I don't see any way that's a 0%er for me. You know, there aren't going to be any receivers. You're not going to see a DK Metcalf. Yeah, I think those are probably my...
That answers another question I've seen a couple times. What position would the Bengals take at 11 that would shock you? For me, it'd be interior defensive lineman.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's temptations probably with a guy like Christian Wilkins for what he could be. He's really a core player and locker room guy and all that stuff. But that would surprise me. I don't see that happening. Really any position, and I'll throw quarterback in there. So any of the other seven positions mm-hmm. besides the three that we mentioned in quarterback would shock me.
Yeah. I like this question. It comes from Matt at Mr. K. Cincy.
Oh, yeah.
Long time. Yeah. All right. What's a position that you think the team might feel better about or worse about than maybe is the general perception? I paraphrase that question.
Yeah. I think they feel better about, well, they feel better about quarterback than the general public. If we're comparing to the general public, but I think the general public also probably knows that. I think they feel better about, I'm going to say that I think they feel better about, well, they might feel better about linebacker than the general public, but that's saying something because it's hard to feel worse than the general public feels about linebacker. I think they have some confidence in guys that were dinged up last year and that might be on the come, like Preston Brown, like Malik Jefferson and Jordan Evans, guys that didn't show much last year when given opportunity that they could ascend. So that probably answers that.
I'll file Malik into the clean slate, guys.
Yeah.
Good for him.
I mean, he's a third-round pick on a red shirt, mm-hmm. really. I mean, we never really got a chance to see him last year at all.
Nick, at Nick Dunlap 48, other than linebacker and right tackle, what position should the Bengals target if they're trying to get a starter? And for me, my answer would be Paris Campbell at wide receiver in the second.
To come in and immediately play the slot where you'd
bump John Ross out of there.
Bump John Ross out as your number four.
Who's also in the clean slate club.
Yeah, that's, I mean, he's really interesting and it would make a lot of sense. You really like your wide receiver core then. If you've got Green and Boyd on the outside. And I mean, the thing is Boyd's ability to move into the slot and make plays is really nice too. So, you know, taking a slot guy. It's an interesting thing on philosophy. I obviously they're interested in him, so they're open to it. I mean, I don't think he would have been here on a visit if not. And they were interested in Deebo Samuel too, so I think they're looking at some of those guys that can come in. I mean, he's a real gadget weapon that a creative new school offensive coordinator would like to play with.
All right, Joe Vogel asks the most important question of the morning. Peeps, yes or no?
No.
I'm a hard no.
Hard no.
Follow-up, fresh or stale? And I'll tell you what, this is kind of weird, and I'm going to admit this. I'm going to put this on tape. I kind of like Oreos that might be a little bit like a day or two past the prime. Yeah. Like they got a little bit of a, I don't know if it's stale, but there's something not quite right about them.
Right. So I got an Oreo story.
So, you don't hear that every day.
Yeah, no. It's not like Rounders or anything like that. I mean, about, you know, I almost, you know, got killed by the Russian mob, but Oreo saved me. It's not like mm-hmm. that. But when I was younger, you know, I was an Oreo kid, big time. Mm-hmm. Big, big time, right? And one day, man, my folks listen to this. I don't know if this ever came, I ever came clean on this. Probably did at some point. I don't know. I have a bad memory. I went total ham YOLO. I went ham YOLO on a whole pack of Oreos that was laying around to the point I was sick.
I was wondering why you didn't come into work last week. Yeah.
And I haven't really been able to eat Oreos ever since.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I don't eat Oreos anymore because it was too much. It's like, you know, you hear people that had a bad experience with like Goldschlager or,
yeah,
or
I have
something like that.
Okay, I have a friend. I have a friend that has a story
can't
like that.
They can't drink it anymore. I'm yeah. like that with Oreos.
Yeah, I have a friend that he'd eaten a rotisserie chicken and had orange soda, and then he got too drunk later that night, and all of that came back up. And to this day, he can't enjoy rotisserie chickens or orange soda.
Oh, ruined two great things all because he decided to get too drunk. That's not right. You can't ruin rotisserie chicken. All right. What else you got?
All right. Dan Savage asks, can we get a Fletcher dog update?
Oh, no. What's going on?
And he wants a special call-in to find out what's making Jim mad.
Oh, everything's... I talked to Jim last week. Many things are still making him mad. Trust me about that. The list is probably too long, but let's get to the dog update.
Okay. So, dog update for the dog Bunk who had the leg injury. He has come into his own. He is a combine. He is the Montez Sweat of our backyard.
How's his heart?
No problems with heart yet. Yeah. But so he has grown and come into his own, and his older brother used to really run him bad. And now Bunk has got the moves, man. And he can make a move. He really works well in space.
Yeah.
We've had no issues with the back leg, and he is moving well.
That's great. So. You need that. You need that clear. That medical clearance before the draft. For sure.
I think at this point we could have the piano start, and then Tom Rinaldi comes in with the intro about where Bunk was and about where he is now.
And then we're all crying.
That's right.
What else we got?
Man, okay. I'm scrolling through here.
We got a lot of repeating questions.
Well,
maybe?
There are some repeating questions, but Andrew McCormick. Love this one. He makes a statement, maybe not a question. After listening to the podcast, you rep Coast to Coast for the last year. He finally bought a pack. He's blown away. Totally changes the IPA game for Andrew. He is ready to blindly embrace any lifestyle tips you throw out going forward.
Oh, now that's what I need. More people blindly following things I say. First of all, of course you were blown away by Coast to Coast because it's incredible. It is absolutely incredible. It's just it's the greatest beer. You should know that. And if you are listening, by the way, great news for you, and you live in the Chillicothe area or anywhere near it, a 50 West is coming to you. They have announced that they are going to be opening a new 50 West in Chillicothe because they're keeping it along Route 50, which is awesome news for anybody. And I know we have a lot of listeners that are all over the state and up that way. So if you're listening, congratulations, man. You just got an awesome brewery coming to your town. So big moves that Optimistic Bobby and everybody at 50 West are making. Maybe future live BBPs, we could go up to Chillicothe when they open the new one. I'm on board.
I'm down for that.
Real road.
We don't
real
even,
road
we don't
trip
even have
BBP.
To have a live BBP to do that. We could just do that for fun.
Yeah. You're right. I'm with you on that. That's a good one.
We kind of touched on this, but Paul Malloy asked if all the kind of major players are taken before 11 that we've laid out, why wouldn't TJ Hawkinson maybe be an option? I think if you want to maybe just briefly.
Yeah, I just don't think that they are – going to spend that type of capital on a position that has some really nice depth mm-hmm. where they can get somebody that is a little step down from that later in this draft where they have CJ for this year. They have Eifert in some capacity. I don't think they need a top 10 pick tight end in order to have, you know, a efficient, effective offense. And so for that fact, I think that that's a position they'd rather draft later. And history has shown us that maybe you should be waiting. I mean, the Bengals spent picks on Tyler Eifert and Jermaine Gresham, and Travis Kelce and Rob Gronkowski went off after those guys. So, you know, sometimes waiting around is the better thing, and tight end has been one of those positions that has kind of proven that way over the years, with a lot of raw guys with basketball backgrounds that still need time to develop.
Mason City Limits, at Hey Clammy, asks, assuming they keep all five picks in the sixth round, what are the deepest positions in the draft that they may need to address? And I got a couple names there just from helping you out a little bit with the position series we did. A couple of local guys, C.J. Conrad, tight end at Kentucky, Mike Edwards. The hybrid. He's a guy that played nickel at Kentucky as well as safety. I wonder how he might fit in terms of a guy that you could play around with.
Try to be in the Landon Collins mode a little bit. Mm-hmm. I know Mike Edwards. Mike Edwards, I have a big circle around, is a guy in the late rounds they could be looking for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Clemson's Albert Huggins, mm-hmm. defensive lineman, interior run stopper.
Yeah, and then you get into maybe in one of these running backs.
You
know, there's a bunch of those guys. I think I had Darwin Thompson from Utah State as a prediction in the series, but you know, there's a lot of those late round running backs, I think, that you can choose from. Those are a few. That's a few positions you'll be looking at.
There's a lot of questions about Ed Oliver, and I know we've already talked about it.
Yeah. He's kind of one of those guys that is being seen all over the map, and I think fans are wondering why they haven't heard more of the Bengals in connection with them, and it's for reasons that we sort of talked about.
All right, and we're going to finish this up with Matthew Allen Chaney.
Okay.
Ask, and this is a question that might be hard to answer. When this year's draft is said and done, what will be the biggest difference in the type of players chosen between Marvin Lewis era staff and Zach Taylor new era staff?
I think you'll see an emphasis on character. We've heard a lot of that from Zach Taylor, and not that they're, you know, towards the end portion here of the Marvin drafts, for the most part, outside of Joe Mixon, they have kind of focused on good quality character guys. But I think trying to institute new culture, quality, you want quality locker room guys that can really help build the culture and be a staple of the way things are supposed to be done and doing it the right way. So I think you might see less of the raw potential but with some background issues and more of the played pretty good but is an unbelievable chemistry character guy that will help the locker room be great. That's part of what built the Rams up. And I think that is part of what Zach Taylor has at least said he wants to bring here. So if we're talking about big picture, I think we'll see more of that, but we don't know. I mean, it's hard to answer that before they do it, because we've never seen these people draft before. But if we're going by what we've heard, I think that's a big part of what we've heard.
I think that's right.
All right.
If you're a prospect out there, delete your Twitter.
Scrub it. And definitely don't do gas mask bong rips at any point and send the video to someone.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're going to do that,
yeah,
don't film yourself doing
it. Yeah, no, bad. Bad. The Laramie Tunsil draft has to be my favorite. I just want to talk to more people that were in Miami in 2016.
Yeah, but he was the number one player on a lot of teams' boards.
People were thinking he was going to be right at the top, and then 10 minutes before the draft, whatever, out comes a video of him doing gas mask bong rips. Man, how bad did you have to piss somebody off in your past where they're like, you know what? Nah. Saving it for 10 minutes. They can't even do any research on it. 10 minutes before the first pick. Went all the way back to 13. Cost him a whole lot of cash. Do you have any videos of gas mask bong rips I need to know about, Fletcher? Anything that I need to know about.
I can assure you that there's no video of me in a gas mask doing anything. So,
I've never worn a gas mask in my life.
I can safely say that.
Point of pride. All right. So reminder to everybody, we will have the live Bengals Beat podcast on Monday. That will be April 29th at 6 o'clock at 50 West Brewing Company. Myself, Fletcher, Zach Taylor, come on down. We'll be talking about the picks. We'll be talking about his first few months. You can put in some questions, and we'll kind of run through everything. It should be a great time down there. I'm really looking forward to it. One of my favorite days of the year, so we hope to see you. That'll be at 50 West Brewing Company next Monday. The draft is this weekend. Keep it locked to Cincinnati.com. Make sure you have our Inquirer Bengals app, because we will be buzzing you in your pocket with every pick as soon as they're picked, with analysis, quotes from the players and the coaches, what they were thinking, and everything that goes down for all of the Bengals picks and trades and everything else that goes down. So it's going to be a wild weekend. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks to everybody that's been following along with the draft series, which is up at Cincinnati.com. You can go into the linebackers one. That has links to every single one of the 11 parts of the draft series. I was trying to do the math on how many words we spilled in that series. At an average of, about 1,200 to 1,500 words per, I found out that was a lot.
Quite a few.
It's quite a few words when you extrapolate. So it made me mostly sad, but happy. It's a labor of love is what it is. So enjoyed bringing it to everybody. So when, and of course, much more coming this week. Mini camp. We never talked about the schedule. Too bad.
Wow.
Sorry, schedule takes it on the chin right there.
Hey, we've got plenty of time.
Plenty of time to talk about the schedule. Seattle's won 10 straight home openers by a gazillion points, so that is a really rough start. Lot of look at what Cleveland is going to do, if they're going to implode over the first half of the season or if they're going to really take off. That will have a huge effect on the Bengals, considering they have both of those games in December against Cleveland. And then you get the home portion of the AFC North with Pittsburgh and Baltimore second, which I actually think is better for the Bengals because they should be playing better as it gets later in the year with the new coaching staff. So you want the more winnable games in the AFC North to be in the back half of the year, and that would mean home
games.
You just
can't help yourself. You're just going on and on here about the schedule.
That's it. I wanted to give people a nutshell. I take back my sad trombone. Breathing. More good podcasts here.
Instrumental break.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the BBP, and enjoy the draft, everyone. We'll talk to you later.